Today's episode of Beyond the Uniform is sponsored by Secured Components. Secured Components is a certified small business supporting the warfighter since 2008. Secured Components delivers innovative and cost-effective solutions for high-reliability supply chain challenges arising from diminishing manufacturing sources and material shortages across a wide range of DoD legacy systems and platforms. Secure Components' commitment to a transparent supply chain, counterfeit avoidance, and strategic sourcing translates to increased readiness, reliability, and efficiency for the warfighter. Please visit their website at securecomponents.com or call them at 484-881-3125. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Nasiri, and each week I meet with military veterans about their civilian career, what they do, how they got there, and advice for other veterans seeking to do the same. Today is episode number 233 with Andre Rush.
And one day, Command Sergeant Major saw me doing some things, and he said, "Hey, I want that guy to come and try out for the team." And when he did that, it changed my life. I mean, it was just by whim. I had no idea what it was, but it opened up, I'll use the word Pandora's box in a good way. Because once I figured out that there was so much more to cooking, I became a pastry chef, a master ice carver, culinary. I did chocolate tier, gastronomy. I did any and everything you possibly think of.
Well, both in and out of the military, Andre has had an incredible career, including being a White House chef, being featured in TMZ and Men's Health, and producing his own television show. This is an inspirational interview. In this interview, we talk about being a leader and a follower at the same time, what it's like to shoot a pilot for a new show, the importance of not jumping on the first opportunity that comes your way, how to juggle a lot at the same time, and more. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find show notes with links to everything we discuss, as well as 230 other episodes just like this one. You'll also find information about our coaching program, where you can get subsidized one-on-one coaching with certified coaches to help you figure out your next career move. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Andre. Well, my guest today joining me in Washington, D.C. is Andre Rush. Andre, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Pleasure. Nice. Glad to be here.
For listeners, I wanted to give you a quick background on Andre. He is the producer of an upcoming show called Chef in the City. It's a unique concept on location cooking that will have Andre taking the audience on adventures across the United States, visiting restaurants, first responder units, children's hospitals, local community centers, military bases, and more. He has been featured on TMZ and in Men's Health, among other publications, and is a former, both a former Army and former White House chef. He does 2,222 push-ups every single day for suicide awareness. For the 22 veterans who commit suicide every day. And so, Andre, let me just also say, I'm a little self-conscious because I do these interviews on my lunch break at work, and I usually eat lunch while doing it. So I'm sitting here with a microwavable Whole Foods meal talking to one of the, you know, world-renowned chefs. So I'm just feeling a little self-conscious about that. Well, maybe to start things off, you know, you joined the Army at 21 as a culinary specialist. How did your career go from there to the Pentagon and eventually the White House?
You know, it's funny because I get that question a lot. I mean, I was military. I loved the military. I actually joined off a whim. I had a football scholarship. I had an art scholarship, track scholarship. I was actually supposed to go to the Olympics for a track, for 100-meter dash, but I was impaled to the military, and I didn't know where it would take me or how it would go. I didn't know that I wanted to serve the country. I went in, and eventually, as a food service, loved the camaraderie, the brotherhood, the sisterhood, you know, the family atmosphere, where everybody just came together. Of course, you know, military is a military of one. And along my way, cooking was in my background because I love my mother and brother actually showed me how to cook younger. And I love to eat, of course. So you just made me hungry with your statement. And I eat a lot, actually. So I love cooking, but I had no idea about the culinary world. So when I joined the military, it was line cooking, it was mass cooking, it was field, it was, deployed. It was just cook, cook, cook in mass quantities. And one day, Command Sergeant Major saw me doing some things, and he said, "Hey, I want that guy to come and try out for the team." And when he did that, it changed my life. I mean, it was just by whim. I had no idea what it was, but it opened up, I'll use the word Pandora's box in a good way. Because once I figured out that there was so much more to cooking, I became a pastry chef, a master ice carver, culinary. I did chocolatier, gastronomy. I did any and everything you could possibly think of. And back then, we have Google, the internet, or anything kind of look at demos. I just bought a bunch of books and trial and error. And from there, I practiced, went to the Olympics, for the Culinary Olympics, the ACF sanction over in Europe, Luxembourg. I represented the USA. And USACAT, I joined. I was nominated for the USACAT team, which is the United States Army Culinary Arts team, which is the supreme of the supreme, from all collaborations of the military all over the world, it's Army. And someone called me and asked me if I wanted to come and try out for a position at the Pentagon. And at that point in time, that was in '96. I had no idea what that would entail. But I said, "Hey, why not?" I mean, I was young. I just was adventurous. I was always in combat arms, and all we did was stay in the field. So once I did the culinary thing, I would jump right back into the field environment. So the culinary became kind of like a hobby, so to speak. And I had no idea that culinary would be my lifeline later on. And once I came to the Pentagon, worked for the Joint Chief of Staff General Sheldon at the time. That again was another box. It just a floodgate of just, inspiration, motivation, just positivity, creativity. And I just went in the DC area along working for the chairman. Started working in a bunch of restaurants, catering places. I mean, I think I was working at one point in time, like five different catering places, another restaurant, and my regular job, because I just wanted to learn. I just wanted to learn everything about it. And I know it's kind of silly because culinary wasn't very like popular back then as it is now. I had no idea that that was going to be my my lifeline. Like I said again. Eventually led to someone saying, "Hey, take me by the hand, grabbing me, take me to the White House, lead me to the door to knock on the door for an interview, just interview and try me out." And they kind of liked me, and well, they liked me a lot. And the rest was kind of like history, to where I am right now to this day, in which I'm very grateful and proud that I stuck and stayed by what I want to do and how I want to do it. And because I'm a big guy, and people kind of, and even back then, it was that stigma with me being a big guy back in the military. They kind of looked, no one knew what my MOS was. Everybody like, "Hey, what's your MOS?" And it was like, "Yeah, I'm food service." They're like, "What? You're who? You're cook?" And I'm like, "What did you just say?" And they're like, "Oh, no, nothing is wrong with it. I want to be a cook too." No, but I loved it.
I love, I love in your story your openness to the new opportunities of giving it a shot at the Pentagon and just kind of being open to where your career is taking you. And I love this image of you, working your job and then having five catering jobs on the side and just honing your craft and getting really good at what you do. And I was curious, like, what was the interview process like at the White House?
Come in and work your butt off. Work your butt off. Or when I say work your butt off, I mean it's a different type of working your butt off. So you have to be knowledgeable. You can be the best chef in the world, but if you don't have that camaraderie and that that connection with the other people that work with you. You're just another cook in a spot that's wasting a position. Hmm. And it doesn't work that way. So like anything, like you have to love your job, but in the White House particularly, everybody has to be a unit, one unit per se. Like the military, everybody has to be on the same accord because there's one mission. And, you know, that mission is the service of what we're there to do. So I of course, my skills back then weren't, I use the word impeccable as they are now, but I was very confident. I was extremely confident. And I was a great listener. And the one thing I learned throughout my career that you have to be ambidextrous is you have to be a leader and a follower at the same time, because you'll never know when you have to do one or the other. When I was young, you know, I was pushed into a leadership position multiple times. And then when people jumped in front or I went, I stepped back and I gave just as much support when I was actually in that position. So it's kind of the same thing. It's all about your work ethic.
Mm. What about, you know, you have cooked for some incredibly incredible VIPs, not least of whom is presidents of the United States. What was that like? Like preparing their food? Was there anything memorable about either their diet or just kind of the pressure of sustaining people who are making levels that affect the world?
You want to know something that's funny? Because I never had the opportunity to let that sink in because I was there for my job. And this is funny because the thing is that I tell people because I do a lot of cooking for the homeless. I do a lot of application for kids also as well. So I do this and I tell people that cooking or your service or your job or whatever should not be discriminatory, meaning that if I am feeding the homeless, I would feed them just as much and even more so if I was feeding the President of the United States, because even more so because they may never get the opportunity again, or they may never have it again, or something may happen. But, you know, the White House has all these accolades, or even the other power forces that I've worked for. Now, of course, I give 100% all the time. And years later, it became very humbling. And not that I took it for granted, but I just always did my job, and I did it diligently, where I didn't have a chance to think about it. I mean, even then, there was a protocol that I stood by from how I was, where you just do your job. That's why I never asked to take pictures. I never took pictures. I was always very conscious of my principles, and as we all are, we are a representation of who we work for in our branch of service, and all service for that matter.
Mm. I love that. I mean, I think that's it speaks to your character, but I think that's a actionable takeaway for people listening, regardless of what career path they want to go into, is that you seem like a man who is all in on whatever you're doing. And I love that thought of whether it's a homeless person or the President of the United States, like approaching it with the same intention, approaching it with the same commitment to excellence. I think that's really admirable.
Thank you.
I'm wondering, so you served for over 22 years in the Army, and I believe about 2 years ago is when you made your transition to a civilian career. Could you walk us through what that transition was like for you and kind of what the first job search was like for you?
The transition, I'm a combat vet. I also was medically retired. So I did over 23, almost 24 years in the military. And I did the one thing that a lot of retiring military vets and people they don't do. They go through their ACAP, or I think it's called something else now. It's called something else, but, you know, of course, I'm still using the old terminology, ACAP, where you go through and you get all the information you need and kind of sign everything and go over everything. But I took it a step farther. I dug deep into every aspect of the military as far as what you're entitled to, what you need to know, how you need to know it when you're doing your VA forms. Knowledge is power, I tell each and every person. So I'm also like a VSO, and I was kind of double dipping as a VSO to help a lot of people. And luckily, I've helped a lot of people. Because now it's not only about you. I get so many people saying, "I'm okay, I'm okay." You know, I said, "But what about your family? What about your daughter, your son, your wife? Are they okay?" Just because you're okay, because you want to do the tough man or woman, you know, persona, doesn't mean that you're okay, and you could be hindering yourself from so many more benefits that the military not only allows for you but for your family as well. So that's the one thing that I did right away. You know, like the 38 CFRs, you know, going in, knowing all your diagnoses, how they're diagnosed, what's the percentages. I mean, it's so many things, but you know, vocal rehab, just so many things. So I say to each and every person that transitional part is great, but take care of yourself before you transition. And that's the one thing I can say to you. Do not leave the military, transition out before you take care of yourself and put your paperwork in, because it's going to be, and I hate to say this, it's going to be a lot harder after you separate, because you're out of the system. The last time I did someone's paperwork, even while I was in LA, was last week. They sent it to me. I went over it, shot it back to them, and went from there. Now, with that being said, is that also leads to more things, because the military has a great system of showing, you know, how our heroes, working vets. They have so many levels of support and organization that are here to help the military on whatever avenue. And the thing about it is, don't be afraid. If you were in a job for 20 years or 25 years and you say you wanted a career change, then by all means, do that. I just had someone email me the other day who just retired from 22 years in, and he said, "Hey, Chef, I want to be a chef. And, you know, what's my first step?" And I took him through. I said, "Hey, congratulations on retiring. Here's your first step and what you need to know." Again, it all goes to knowledge on each and everything. And the one thing that I can say for sure is, like I do in life, treat every day as your first. I don't care. I tell you to break it down in this perspective is your first kiss, your first date, your first kid, you know, your first job, the first day at work. Don't ever waver. Even your first workout, you know, for the New Year, people say, "I'm going to work out, you know, it's my first day," and all of a sudden a week later they don't come back. I said, treat every day as your first, right? And give 100% each and every time. And that's the problem with a lot of things, that we become complacent sometimes and it kind of gets away from us. But it's so many different programs in the military that it's a no-brainer. The military sets you up for success.
I love that. I love that mantra of treating every day as your first. And I'm curious, you know, you gave that advice to someone who asked about if they want to become a chef, what advice you have for them. What would you say for listeners if someone listening is maybe a year from getting out and they want to go down this culinary path? What advice would you have for them?
As I said to the young man that asked me that question, him transitioning over, it's funny because years ago I had a colonel. I trained his son who wanted to be a chef. And fast forward to about last year, the colonel got out. He came to one of my events, and he just graduated culinary school. And he was inspired, and he became a chef. And his son also went to culinary school. So that was pretty amazing. But the advice I would give is, say, there's so many different levels to being a chef or a cook or however, food service, however you want to describe it. But know, knowledge again is power. Know what you want to do, how you want to do, location, locality. There's different levels and different schools that offer more in depth, a little bit less. So know where you want to go, you know, Google them, get information from them, find out the requirements, find out the program. Again, that's where you can caveat from the military with your post 9/11. So it's easy for you. So if you do decide to transition over and do something in culinary, whatever field it is, I say the same thing is find out all the information leading up to that as soon as possible. Don't do it, like you said, a year is great. Don't do it a month before you get out and say, hey, I think I want to be a fighter pilot or something.
That's awesome. What about, what can you tell us about your upcoming show, Chef in the City?
It's going to be fantastic. I want to stay true to my integrity with the show as far as my cooking, but also, you know, a perspective where you highlight us. You know, I didn't want it to be, I had to use the word that kind of drama feel, you know, yelling and cussing and or whatever to be a role model. And with that being said, I wanted to show, of course, like the emergency personnel, the military, the youth, the homeless, but doing it in an exciting way. And even since then, I also have another show that I'm doing a pilot for. We're shooting a pilot next month for it. So I'm excited about that as well. And that's going to be kind of the same principle, but it's going to be much more on an adventurous side.
That's great. I mean, I love the thought of doing the show that's true to who you are and not having it be all about drama and not setting a bad example. I think that's, we need more shows like that. How did this even come about? Like, this is just such an incredible opportunity. Where did this all come from?
And what are you referring to, the show or just in general?
Oh, the show in particular.
I've been fortunate. A lot of people have come to me with a lot of different ideas. You know, saying, hey, you want to do this show, you want to do this, you want to do that. I am writing a book also, by the way, which I decided to do that, which is going to be out next year.
What's the title? Do you have the title, or can you share the title yet?
Of the book?
Yeah.
Not yet.
Okay.
I'm kind of debating on it. Because the book is going to be pretty I'm actually more stoked about the book than I am the show, really, because it's true to who I am as well. I did something that a lot of guys in my position don't have the opportunity to do. People want to jump on the first thing coming. I had so many people come to me with so many different ideas and offers and so forth. And the first person that I said, they gave me a very simple contract. And when this particular network asked for me by name, just by chance, and this is how life works for you, my contract with them ended. And they sent me another contract, and that contract basically wanted me to sign over my entire life. Literally. I mean, direct morals, they wanted to use my image, my likelihood, and so forth. And after that, I said, okay, that happened for a reason. I just cut everyone off. And finally someone came to me, a very renowned person, and said, hey, Chef, here's what we want to do, and here's what we want to hold your integrity, and, you know, you're going to be a better producer also as well. You get to do this, you get to do that. And even with the next show that I'm talking about next month that I'm piloting for, they said the exact same thing. They say, here's X, Y, and Z, and just do it your way, full input, and be creative. So I love that camaraderie as being a team. And that's what I said to each and every person. I said, hey, I want a team. I want someone like-minded, not greedy, not, you know, alternative motives, just true.
Yep. I love that. Do you have any advice? I'm just struck by the TV show, you've got another pilot coming up, you're writing a book, like you have, it seems like you have so much going on. How do you manage all of that? Like, and also I'm sure you have a pretty rigorous exercise routine as well. Like, how do you have any advice for listeners about how to juggle their schedules, and especially because I know a lot of guests have asked before about work-life balance and a fear of not having enough time for their family and other things.
So that's a great, great question, actually. And I was actually faced with that exact same thing, because doing this is completely different than anything else. I've been in the military and I can work 100 hours a week. I can do that constantly and with not even blinking. But 100 hours a week doing this is exhausting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it can be exhausting from one place. Like I just returned from LA this morning. I was there for 2 weeks and I'll leave out again in another week and I'll come back and I'm writing a book and I'm doing this, doing that. But here's the good thing about it was I was in the military, and so all the listeners that's listening, they were in the military as well, or still are in the military, or transitioning out, and we're trained for this. This is what we do in everyday life. You know, no matter what your job is and how stressful or whatever, you always have to remember though, family first. Family's always going to be first, because family is going to be the people that's going to be by your side, and that's your first. I put my three major things. That's your mental state. Mental is why I do my 2,222 push-ups a day, and then you go into your nutritional state where you have to put your nourishment in your body because you are what you eat, which lastly leads to that physical state where you do need to exert energy and exercise. Which is one of my big things as well. But you have to think accordingly. Plan everything out. Get a day planner. Get some type of organization where you can have a date night, kid night, family, so forth. But you have to communicate with your family, your spouse, your kids, and you have to let them know that you're still there and prevalent no matter what. Even if you're doing 100 hours a week per se, right? You can balance that, and I found that out easily, actually. Because there's another light. And like I said, this is another adventure. Whatever you go into, again, like I said, you know, make it your first day every day and kind of work it from there and get your family on board to understand, which they'll be on board anyway. But it was trying in the beginning, maybe for like the first 3 weeks. And I think that mostly was because of myself not used to all the directions, because I am in a lot of directions, and a lot of people come at me in even more directions. So, you know, I put a few hundred thousand followers and people messaging, because I messaged every person that contacts me. You know, and some of them just want to say hi, and some of them have serious issues saying, hey, Chef, I'm thinking about committing suicide. What should I do? Who should I talk to? What can happen? I don't, or just saying they want to talk in general because they're lonely or whatever. I never turn anyone away. I never say, hey, go to, I say the 800 number later, but in the beginning, I'm going to stop and I'm going to talk and I'm going to address them as long as possible as needed until it's kind of resolved. So.
That's great. I love that. I love that commitment to staying connected to people who reach out to you. And that was one of the things I wanted to ask about is, what has this been like, this rise into fame, and how, if that has changed anything about your routine or your workout regimen, or just how that's impacted your life in general, being a public figure like this?
It has changed. So in the military, I've always done advocacy. I've always done things and helped people. I've always put my guys and other guys in front of the light and say, hey, it's your choice on what you can do with it once you get it. You can take it all for yourself or you can give it back. In my case, when I was kind of, you know, bombarded and pushed into that, I take that back. I wasn't pushed. It was supposed to happen. It was supposed to happen because it was, you know, divine intervention. And I wanted to give back. I wanted to give back. And I said, instead of about 10 or 20 people hearing me, I can have, you know, 200, 300, 400,000 people following me or hearing me and the message that's for us, not for myself. So that's the one thing I did know to do, was take the light off of myself, give it back to, and off the White House, give it back to the people. And I've had some wonderful people that support me along with that. Arnold Schwarzenegger catch when I was on Good Morning America. Actually, I just saw him. I just saw him 2 days ago.
Oh, man.
In L.A. So that was fortunate. great advocate. I mean, he's an extraordinary person, you know, all for the military. There's so many people out there that's willing to help and support. On my scale is that I get to help and support so many different people, and so many different organizations come to me about everything. The one thing that you find interesting was someone came to me in the very beginning. They said, "Hey, Chef, you're everywhere. You're everywhere. And, you know, what's your focus? You need to do one thing." And I said, I am everywhere. And everywhere is where I belong. Meaning that I've had 50 different directions, and I give 100% to all 50. And all 50 directions, which was 50 different things, every direction, someone has come to me about that direction. And they never said, "Chef, you're doing too much." They just said, "Chef, we want you on our team," which I really appreciate. But I'm very humbled and blessed that because even my followings are a largely a group of younger, between the ages of 14 and 28. So I love that. I love that.
I
love the support of the celebrities.
I love that you I think you're a great example of someone who's forged his own way. And it's, you know, it's interesting. It seems like along the way, there's a lot of people who have said what you can and can't do. And like, this is what it needs to look like, you focusing on one thing. And I see that as integrity in terms of your commitment to knowing, okay, this is what works for me, and this is the way I want my life to be, and this is the way I'm going to live it, and not letting those people dictate the structure of your life or where you focus. I think that's really admirable.
The one thing I say that was funny when you asked me that question was, when this all happened to me, everybody was saying, "Hey, haha, you know, you got your 5 minutes of fame." And I didn't say anything. I didn't care about 5 minutes or 2 minutes or whatever. But when I did have those 5 minutes of fame, I said to him, I said, "Well, if I got 5 minutes, I'm going to speak the entire 5 minutes and reach as many people as possible." So just the other day when I was in L.A., I think Saturday, one of the celebrities said to me, he said, "You know, you're quite, you know, extraordinary." He said, "You have been doing this all this time. I've been doing it by myself. And you are relevant." He said, "You are 100% relevant." He said, I've seen so many people that they get a picture or get this or that, and they just go away right away. Or they try to commit drama to make themselves even more relevant and whatnot. He said, "You didn't do any of that." And you're here right now where we are.
And that's awesome.
And that, which I think was pretty funny, because even I laughed at it, because Men's Health named me number two of the swollest people in front of Arnold Schwarzenegger and The Rock and other. So it was, I kind of laughed at things like that, but I love it that I can, and I make fun of it. I have to laugh at myself, because you have to laugh at situations to make other people comfortable. And I don't want to be serious. I want to be serious and funny, and I want everybody to just want everybody to be connected all at once.
That's great. And speaking of that, because I think it's great that you use that notoriety for good and for causes, could you tell us a little bit about what motivates you to do 2,222 push-ups every day?
So I do the 2,222 push-ups a day, of course, for Mission 22, which is 22 vets commit suicide a day. But I want to take it a little bit farther, and I did the 2,222. I do the 2,222 because I wanted to make a louder statement and talk about not only the vets, but, you know, everyone else. Suicide is number 10 leading cause for death today, 800,000 a year, you know, from Samantha, who's a six-year-old who committed suicide, to the homeless, to the helpless. So if you say 22 a day, but when you say a number like 800,000, or if you say number 10th leading cause of death, you're like, wow, okay, I didn't know that. And everyone I talk to, they don't know that. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I had no idea what the actual numbers were until I actually did the research on them, and they have risen since then, you know. And that's one of the things which I focus on, and I also caveat on a couple other different things, but it is something that's true to its nature. You know, we just had, you know, the admiral who just committed suicide himself. And you never know what someone's going through, especially with the younger generation, with bullying and so much. And people, you know, kind of get, even with the military, which is that stigma, is PTSD. You know, PTSD that they're going to be irate, or they're going to commit suicide, or everyone is going through something. It doesn't have to be war-related. It could be family-related. It could be life-related. It could be child. It could be anything. You know, but you have to treat everybody as if they're yours.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it, if it was your family, right? Don't shun them, or don't look away, don't turn away, or think that they have a disease. You know, you address it and with compassion.
I love that. Well, I always like to keep the last question open-ended, which is, what have we not talked about today that you want to make sure listeners know before we wrap up?
I think you actually kind of covered everything. I'm not a big talker unless I'm talking.
I love it.
And then they tell me I talk too much. But it's been a pleasure just being here and being able to speak with you and just tell a little bit of my story.
Yeah.
I'm grateful for you and all the listeners.
Thank you. And for listeners, I will keep you posted as Chef in the City comes live, and as Andre's book comes out as well. We'll be sure to send an update out when that comes. But yeah, just really appreciate your energy and the inspirational story that you have.
Service.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Beyond the Uniform. There are over 200 free episodes at beyondtheuniform.io. They're classified by the industry of focus, the functional role the person plays, and more. Beyond the Uniform is hosted, produced, and edited by me, Justin Asiri. Our Director of Outreach, responsible for sponsorship and guest episodes, is Steve Bain. Our editor, responsible for the show notes and text transcripts for all episodes, is Kathleen Dillon. Our data analytics and insights advisor is Andrew Woolridge. If you are enjoying Beyond the Uniform, you can help us out by telling your veterans and friends in the military about this free resource. There is more information on the website about how you can sponsor an episode or donate to our program to help us grow the work that we're doing. Be sure to check out the coaching section of beyondtheuniform.io, where you can be paired with professional, subsidized coaches to help you figure out your next career move. You can sign up for our newsletter to be up to date on the latest happenings at Beyond the Uniform. And in each show notes section, there is a link to audible.com, which is providing a free audiobook of your choice to Beyond the Uniform listeners. You get a free book of your choosing, and Beyond the Uniform gets $15 to subsidize the cost of the show, regardless of whether you continue with audible.com or not. Check that out and more in the show notes for this episode. Keep the feedback coming. Let me know what resources would help you in your career, and we'll do our best to make that happen. Take care, be safe, and I'll be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career.